Welcome, everyone, to Commerce Experience. I'm your host, Brian Walker, Chief Strategy Officer at Bloomreach. Today, I'm excited to have someone on I've known for many years, Kelly Gitch, co-founder and chairman of the MACH Alliance. MACH, M-A-C-H, stands for Microservices, API First, Cloud Native SaaS, and Headless. And the MACH Alliance is an organization advocating for an open and best-of-breed enterprise technology ecosystem as the way forward from an all-in-one enterprise suite. Kelly also serves as the Chief Strategy Officer at Commerce Tools and has published three books on commerce technology, microservices, and distributed computing. In this episode, we're focused on Kelly's work with the MACH Alliance, what it is and what to know, why business and technology leaders should care about it, and how MACH can potentially transform your innovation roadmap. As a footnote, Bloomreach just joined the MACH Alliance, and we're very pleased to join such an important group of technology and solution partners, some of which we compete with today, and many others we already partner with. I think you'll understand why as you listen to Kelly and I's conversation. Kelly, it's so great to see you again. Thank you so much for taking some time to be with us here today on the podcast.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Kelly, we always begin with the same question when we have a guest on the podcast. What was your first job or role that dealt with digital or e-commerce?
Well, if you go back really far, in high school, I was doing a lot of web development, and I built the first websites for local law firms. Did funeral homes. I did a lot of those professional, you know, and this was like 90, when was this? 97, you know, really, so folks were just needing a website. Mm-hmm. I used my cracked version of Dreamweaver and Notepad, and it was great. So I did that. And then my first year of college, I was looking for a summer job, and I found a local ad, and I live in a pretty small town in Wisconsin, and they were looking for someone to turn Photoshop wireframes into production-ready HTML. And I thought, I can do that. That's pretty easy. And I applied, and it was a temp job at the time. And it turns out it was footlocker.com, which due to some fluke of history ended up being headquartered here. And I didn't realize it, but at the time they were doing the largest ATG implementation ever. So right place, right time. And then once I started, I was reasonably good at it. I'd been doing it for a while. And I had a mentor there. He was the lead architect for ATG. And he was just about to retire. And really wanted to mentor someone. And I guess right place, right time. I was 18, 19.
Wow.
And he mentored me, and I went to school full time and I worked full time. And it was a great first year.
Wow, that's fantastic. I didn't realize that's how you kind of got plugged into the whole ATG train early on. That makes sense. That's fascinating.
Planned happenstance.
It's so great to hear all these stories of how people got involved in the industry back in the day. Before we get into what the MACH Alliance is, Kelly, I think a great place to start is if you could just sort of talk about the problem, the context with which the MACH Alliance came from. And that in a sense relates to how you got involved in the industry in some respects. But I'd love to just kind of hear you talk a little bit about the context and the problem leading up to forming the MACH Alliance.
Sure. And I'm wearing a couple different hats here. So I have my, I was CPO of Commerce Tools for 6 years. Now I'm Chief Strategy Officer, a job you know well. I have a feeling some jokes are coming about that one. And then what else? I'm also wearing my MACH Alliance hat. So I'm co-founder and chairman. So I'll be intertwining these two because they are linked. But we at Commerce Tools invented headless commerce back in 2013. And we'd been struggling for a way to tell our story. And we, in 2018, started using this term that we invented called MACH, or as the Germans would say, MACH. And the Brits would say MAC. Yeah, and
M-A-C-H anyway. For those listening, yes.
MACH, it stands for microservices, APIs, cloud, and headless, MACH. And it was really a cool term. It just crystallized what we do. It has this nice metaphor for speed. So a lot of our first, you know, advertisements were, plane of some sort flying at Mach speed. And I think it's the real benefit for what it is that we were doing at Commerce Tools at the time, which is use this entirely new approach and you can go much, much faster. That was kind of our whole value at the time. So that works out really well. And we started to have partners pick that up. We started to have others in the industry start to use it. And it got to be such a big term that I had a developer apply to join my team who claimed that he was a mock certified developer. And, you know, I've been around long enough to see what happens when a new term is coined. And what ends up happening is...
I might be a little familiar with coining terms. Yeah.
Yes, right. Anytime there's a cool new term coined, everybody latches onto that. And whatever product they have, whether or not it has anything to do with that cool new term, is suddenly rebranded. And we're seeing that thing now with Metaverse. Right now, all online games are somehow redefined as Metaverse, which is crazy. You know, we saw that happen with machine learning, where now anything that has an algorithm is suddenly machine learning or artificial intelligence. Big data, we saw that. And before, we saw that with cloud. And, you know, I was at some of these bigger tech companies back in the day, and
suddenly you're cloud.
What happened? Yeah. You know, 80s tech is suddenly magically cloud, because cloud was a new term that everybody wanted and needed. And we didn't want the same thing to happen with mock. We thought this was really interesting, really compelling. There's a lot of value here. And we explicitly said, let's get together as an industry. Because I think independently, none of us have enough might in the market to do very much. Because there are a lot of these smaller, best of breed vendors, you know, us, Bloomreach, you know, Algolia, Constructor, like there are a lot of really good small-ish companies. And there are 200 to 1,000 employees. And we're typically doing one or two or maybe three things, but you know, we're doing something really, really deep as opposed to a large suite with 200,000 employees, right? And we thought, let's get together and explicitly, let's gatekeep here. Let's do something different. And I registered a 501c6 and got some partners to chip in some money.
That's an industry association, correct?
Yeah. Like, you know, I live in Wisconsin. They run ads on TV here that say, drink cow's milk if you...
Yes.
You know, exactly. If you drink almond milk, it'll poison you.
Yeah.
You know? That's a 501c6. And one of the, it's we're taxed as a nonprofit, which is great. But the catch is, and this is a good thing for us, which it was part of why we chose it, is you cannot lobby for any one product. It's not meant for that, right? You can't say almond milk will kill you, drink milk from Foremost Farms. Right. You can just say, drink Wisconsin-made milk, and that's fine. And in the Mock Alliance, we do the same thing. We say, you should pick a mock-based CMS, and of which, right, there are these eight members that are members of the Alliance that offer this product. Pick one that best suits your needs. So we got together, registered this 501c6, and we set it with three basic goals. The first is we're explicitly gatekeeping. We're deciding who can use the term and who cannot use the term. And it's very much a member-driven organization. We now have 74 members, and we have different panels and boards internally, and they're composed of members of the Alliance. And we have very strict criteria, both technically and commercially, for who gets in. And once you're in, then you can claim to be mock certified. We only certify at the company level. And I think that's a key distinction, is we're certifying an entire company and all of its products. They're safe to do business with, basically. So the first thing is gatekeeping. And we're pretty proud of that. We also have a trademark on the term mock, which we may or may not choose to enforce. We're having discussions right now because there are folks out there who are not certified who are using the trademark. And we could legally, if we wanted to, we could prohibit that, which, as far as I know, would be a first of its kind of action in the industry.
Yeah. Also, from a context perspective, leading up to the birth of API-first, microservices-based, SaaS-native solutions, which is really what the mock is comprised of, just kind of reflecting on where we were as an industry, the technology landscape before that, right? We were talking about single tenant solutions that could be hosted in the cloud. Some had proprietary kind of development frameworks, some open source development frameworks, but these were potentially hosted in a cloud environment, but often on-prem early days, meaning in a data center that a company ran and operated in and of themselves. And oftentimes these platforms, whether they be CMS or commerce platforms, you know, those in a sense got highly customized and implemented. And, you know, you, of course, had a lot of experience with that, which we already kind of reflected on. And there was this paradigm shift that really started to happen, you know, mid-2000s, if you will. Fast forward, now the industry is really coalescing. And in a sense, that's what Mach, you know, certifies and represents, as you already shared. And I guess that's part of the context that I want to make sure people who are coming to this, maybe from the business perspective, who are used to hearing about Hybris or used to hearing about Acquia or used to hearing about Sitecore or Adobe CQ5 or what have you, recognizing that there was this sort of paradigm shift in terms of technology architectures that were enabled by public cloud technologies like AWS and Google Cloud maturing. But these are now sort of a next generation set of solutions that operate under a different architectural paradigm. And that's in a sense what Mach kind of represents. I'd love to kind of hear some of your additional thoughts on that.
Yeah. And, you know, if you go back to the 90s and 2000s when folks were first getting online, they didn't have organizational capabilities in-house. Like, they didn't have these armies of developers that you now see. So that was one challenge. Another challenge was, is we didn't have cloud back in the day. So there was no way to, for a SaaS vendor to start up and do basically one thing really well. It was a very capital intensive business to start a software company, and you needed lots of hardware, lots of software. There weren't that many vendors out there in the market.
You basically need to ship an application server with your solution in order to run it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now, I mean, you could have two co-founders ship a SaaS product pretty easily, right? It's democratized this. So it's a very different world. And also, remember back in the day, we didn't have REST APIs. I mean, REST APIs didn't actually exist on paper until the year 2000. And they weren't really widely used until about 2007, 2008, with the advent of the App Store and iPhones. But before that, we didn't have any of that. That just didn't exist conceptually. And, you know, before you had cloud, you didn't have things like microservices or non-relational databases or any of the modern tech, you know, anything that if you're building something from scratch today, you would use. None of that existed before 2009-ish, somewhere in that neighborhood. So we have so many more building blocks. Folks are much more technically competent. And they're not willing anymore just to write out a check to a mega vendor and get everything forklifted to them in a box. And they just restyle it and deploy it. And that's about it. You know, like that's a different world that we're now in. We now have multiple heads. So a head is how you engage with commerce. It could be social media. It could be mobile. It could be desktop. It could be anything.
That's right. Apps, browsers, kiosks, cars, all of them represent front ends, so to speak, of how this technology comes together, all called through an API and coordinated through the front end, which is, you know, a big paradigm shift.
Yeah, 100%. So that's kind of the first thing is certifying members, right? Who's in and who's not? And it's a stamp, it's a binary thing, you know, yes or no. The second thing we do is, as an industry, we're creating and growing a category, because until pretty recently, the default was, if you're a VP of e-commerce or, you know, take your pick of marketing, you're going to think to yourself, if I write out a check to, you know, name your mega vendor, probably not going to get fired if it goes wrong, right? It's the whole, you're not going to get fired for choosing IBM thing. And until recently, that was it. But now, as an industry, we've come together through the Mach Alliance to present a credible alternative. And we do a lot of thought leadership and education. So we have webinars on the accounting of SaaS software where we have CFOs participate. There's a guy, Sam Newman, who wrote all the microservices books for O'Reilly. We had him do a webinar. You know, I'll give you another example. And actually, Bloomreach is participating in this. I have C-level from the major search vendors in the Mach Alliance coming together to talk about all of the changes that are impacting search. Because there's still this prevailing view that first generation search solutions are very commoditized. And I think they were, but members of the Alliance now have very non-commoditized new offerings. You know, I recently got together the OMS folks in the Alliance. So everybody with an OMS, they all have slightly different views. got them together and educating the market on what an OMS means in 2022.
I think that's one of the really credible and interesting things you've been able to accomplish with the Mach Alliance is creating an umbrella under which competitors can come together, collaborate, and in a sense, drive some joint benefit while still competing out on the playing field, right, for opportunities to work with different brands, retailers, et cetera. And I'd love to kind of get your perspective on that. And how does that dynamic work in practice?
It's actually pretty remarkable. So right before this podcast, I pulled together the CEOs of Uniform, Octu, and Concia. And they had not met each other, but they obviously are direct. They're the only three competitors in this very emerging category. And we're doing a panel on digital experience composition, right? What is this thing? And it was great because it was nice for them to meet. But second, and I acknowledged this right away, I said, look, you are not competing with each other at all, right? And what you're doing is you're coming together here to create awareness about an entirely new category, new way of doing things. And they all very much agreed. And I always do that when I get competitors together. Like it's not a zero-sum game. What this is expanding Mach, making it the default. And that's the way we see the alliance is as long as one of us is winning business, we're happy about that. That's great. What matters is that they're choosing modern Mach-based technology. I personally invited Content Layer, which is a direct competitor of ours. I invited VTEX, BigCommerce, you know, the other commerce vendors. I invited them in because as an industry, I don't particularly care which one of us wins. What I care about is that they're not choosing
Magento. You ever have to send the kids to their respective corners?
No, we're all right. We're all adults here. It hasn't come to that yet. And, you know, truth be told, like we're all in the same category, which is the legacy incumbents still have the vast majority of this market share. As long as we in this category are winning, that's a win, that's a positive for everyone. And that's what we're here for, is educating folks. What is a microservice? Why is it important to my business? Why should I do business with SIs and ISVs that are, you know, that are offering microservices? What is headless commerce, you know? And if we keep it in it, none of this is vendor stuff. None of this is pitching. None of this is commercial. The alliance and all activities through it are purely about creating and expanding the category, because people just didn't know about this thing. And now what's really heartening to see is we're seeing a lot of RFPs come through at Commerce Tools where they're explicitly demanding that the vendors replying have to be Mach-based because it has emerged as such a trusted, credible validation. And it's an easy one. If, you know, we have, I think, what is it, 74 members as of this morning, something like that. If you're in there, you're certified and vetted, and it's an easy stamp because it's pretty easy to put Mach on a press release. It's a lot harder to get through the Mach Alliance and become a certified member.
As Bloomreach can attest, it was a two-year project on our side to make sure we could meet all the criteria, and the vetting was very rigorous. And a note on competition, I always like to use this analogy. I've been in the industry, obviously, a long time. I've played lots of different roles in industry, including industry analyst, consultant, obviously on the vendor side and the customer side. And, of course, I've gotten to know many, many people throughout that career who I think, you know, I'm very fortunate to count almost all of them in some ways as friends. Even when we competed tooth and nail, we maintained that. And I always say, you know, you play by the rugby rules, meaning when you're on the field competing, you compete with everything you got. And you might be even a little nasty on the playing field a bit, you know, pull on a jersey here or there or whatnot. But then when the game is over, maybe that's a kind activity in rugby, really. But anyway, it might be some teeth missing. But after the game is over, you go to the bar, you have a beer, you sing some songs, and you hug it out. And you become often lifelong friends. And that's kind of a principle that I've always tried to apply, even when I was competing in the market. And of course, if you've been in this market long enough, you know, it's a fairly small community. And so in a sense, I imagine the Mach Alliance is a really cool bar. We're going to go have some pints.
It's true. And like, I just don't like that style of business where it's a zero-sum game and you know, you're trying to eke out every last penny you possibly can. And it's not about that. It's about making customers happy by delivering them the products and services they need. It's about playing fair. It's about being open about what your product can and cannot do. Open documentation. It's just, it's transparency. That's really what it is. And may the best product win. And look, everybody has different needs. And if somebody chooses BigCommerce or VTEX or, you know, any one of the other competitors, I might not like it, but I might understand it. You know,
you might learn from it as well.
I might learn from it. And that's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as it's not Magento.
Shifting gears a little bit, a lot of people listening here are coming from the business perspective. They may be running e-commerce businesses or have a role in merchandising or marketing or even in the back office. And I'd love to hear your perspective. When a business person hears, you know, mock alliance from someone in the market, someone on their team, from a prospective vendor, what should they understand about that? What questions would you recommend they ask? How can they get better educated so that they feel like they can participate in that kind of a discussion as a business leader?
I think that's where we come together as an alliance and provide the most value. It's in educating the industry. And if you go to mockalliance.org and you click on insights, we have weekly blog posts about something or other. All of our webinars are on replay. We have hundreds of different sessions where we have ambassadors and others who are active in the community. They've recorded sessions. We have explainer guides. You know, we have a 30-second what's a microservice clip that we've done. We have a podcast. You know, we have a lot of resources, and we're intended to be a vendor-neutral place to learn more about new tech. So I would really say Mock Alliance. And then we do a lot through social media as well. So follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, others. Again, non-commercial entity, you know, very much a 501c6, and that we're furthering a category here as an industry as opposed to, you know, pitching any
drink
products
milk.
Or anything of that. Yes, exactly. Drink your milk. Wisconsin milk.
Well, I'm in Washington State. My grandfather was a dairyman here in Washington State and worked for Dairy Gold, which was the same kind of thing. Back on business value, you know, you talked about speed earlier and that was, you know, part of the attraction of Mock as kind of a coalescing concept to kind of go with, and now has become a brand unto its own. But I'd love to really, you know, focus on the business value of this type of architecture, working with a vendor that is API, cloud native, SaaS solution. What does that represent? Why should I care as a business leader when it comes to the business value or what the benefits are as a business?
It's a couple things. First, as vendors, we tend to do a couple things really well, or just one thing. And we're very interoperable as vendors, roughly. And I always tell folks about, you know, that we're selling to a Commerce Tools, you know, if I'm involved, if Commerce Tools is not meeting your need, throw us out. That's fine. Right? I understand. Now, we don't lose customers because we have a good service. But that's the beauty of this style of software is we're not welded together for the rest of eternity. SaaS vendors, we're all relatively replaceable, and we have to earn our customers' business every single day. And if they don't like us, they don't have to use us.
And that's the notion of composable, right? I can bring different services together and integrate them relatively easily in order to drive capabilities. And if a service isn't performing, whether that's literal performance of the service in terms of speed or availability or the outcomes that you're trying to drive with it, the notion of composability, which is another term that people listening may not be highly familiar with, but is obviously very related to Mock, that concept is that these services can come in and out. And so there's a level of agility and flexibility with your tech stack. And because it is all API oriented, the development effort to bring those things together is much different than the older paradigm.
Yeah, and I would also argue the other benefit to Mock is just speed to market. And I'm a big believer that innovation requires iteration. And we're replacing a lot of old ATG out there. We've done 28 migrations of ATG at this point at Commerce Tools. I know others have as well. But those legacy style platforms, and they were all built in the same era, you know, 97, 98, 99, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Some a little later.
Some a little bit later, but you know, they're of that Java EE era, you know.
That generation.
Yep. Of that generation. They're deploying to production once a month, sometimes once a quarter.
You've got to compile the code, you've got to test it, you got to regression test everything together, and then deploy.
I probably shouldn't say the name, but the world's largest electronics retailer was deploying to production once a year for more than a couple of years. And they would have an annual all hands on deck, and they would release all of their front end and all their back end, and it was a once a year deployment to production. But that was kind of the ethos back then, is like, let's get everything checked in, you know, let's do this quarter's deployment. Everybody come in on a Saturday night, let's order some pizza. And now with Mach, you're able to release to production. In some cases, we have customers who release to production with every commit. So every time they write code and save it, basically, they're pushing that to production. So in practice, it could be every couple seconds. And what's nice about that is when everything is API based, your interfaces are very clearly testable, right? You, for any given input to an API, the output should be, you know, predictable, right? Because they're nice discrete interfaces there. So as a result, you can just run all of your testing automatically and make absolutely sure that you're
right, and there's probably many people here listening who are running on, let's say, you know, a classic architecture, who are very familiar with, you know, the version numbers that, you know, their IT or development staff talk about, and oh, we're on version 12.5, and you know, the new feature that the vendor just talked to you about, well, that's on version 14.1, and we would need to upgrade twice in order to get there, and all that frustration. Not just in terms of what you're trying to do within your own experience, right, and or back end, but also, you know, versions of software. And on the vendor side, you know, if the API doesn't change, you know, we can release a innovation or a feature that really the end customer doesn't actually need to adopt or even really pay a lot of attention to, as long as that API doesn't significantly change. And so that's also a huge paradigm shift in terms of how all this works together. And of course, you're far more technical than I am, but I think that's another important thing to understand on the business side. Like all that friction that used to be, you know, there, both in terms of your own teams deploying things, and as you said, you know, the once a month to potentially even once a year, and all that backlog of innovation you're looking to bring forward inside your customer experience or your business process. Okay, so you're alleviating a lot of that pressure. And then similarly, vendors bringing innovation, you can adopt that much more quickly and easily because it's just now a new attribute or a new type of API call that your developer integrates relatively easily on the front end.
Yeah. And you know, all of us as Alliance members are multi-tenant SaaS by definition. And in multi-tenancy, there's no such thing as a version, like you said. So we're all publishing updates all the time. We're doing so in a way that doesn't break anything. But it's very similar to when you log into Gmail and there's a feature there. It's there. You can use it or not, but you don't have to. And it's there. It's available. And you're not buying a static piece of software like you did with the legacies. Instead, you're buying a service that is continually improving day after day, month after month.
So when I talk to business people about this, you know, I really focus on flexibility, agility, and innovation. You know, and so we've talked about those first two things. When it comes to innovation, you may want to try things that previously would be still a fairly heavy lift in terms of working with an SI or an agency, working with your own team. And again, there's a lot of capital and resources tied up in anything you were doing to experiment and or release a new feature. So which meant that you really didn't do a lot of experiments. You really just focused on what you knew you needed to deliver, and you were going to be fairly safe in what you chose to do because it was kind of labor and time intensive and or capital intensive. Now, when you're talking about calling APIs and leveraging this multi-tenant software solution behind the API, innovating on the front end becomes relatively inexpensive and something that you can look and say, well, I want to try something like an immersive new experience, or I want to try a new channel. I want to embed commerce somewhere within, let's say, a physical store environment or a new interface that I have in mind or my product, right? In the case of many products today, this opportunity with a connected solution, so, you know, IoT and so forth. Now we have an opportunity to experiment. And with a modern API first architecture, that level, that cost of experimentation goes down, which means you can lean in to try to differentiate and or find a new path to delighting the customer or a new revenue stream. And that's another piece, right? So when it's all about differentiation in the market, it's agility, it's cost efficiency long term, and it's innovation.
Yeah. And look, it might take you 2, 3, 4, 5 iterations to start perfecting a feature to where you're generating some top line revenue. And if you're releasing to production once a quarter, I mean, it could take you a year that you're losing out on additional revenue, where you're releasing to production every couple minutes. I mean, it might take an afternoon to perfect, right?
Theoretically. I'd love your perspective. Of course, you know, Bloomreach joining the Mach Alliance, we're thrilled about that. And of course, we participate in some categories where there are already Alliance members. And, you know, we're looking forward to hanging out in that bar, the Mach Alliance bar together. Search, site merchandising, content as examples of solutions and capabilities we bring to the table. You know, we have competitors, and there are other parties involved in Mach who represent those categories. But I'd love to hear your perspective on the addition of Bloomreach's capabilities in areas like personalization, customer data solutions with our data engine, and of course, campaign orchestration and marketing automation. That's kind of new for the Mach Alliance. I'd love to get your thoughts on what that means from your perspective as we enter the Alliance and represent kind of a new category of solution there.
Yeah, I think you are the first CDP, and the personalization as a result of that. Although we have another.
Personalization's a broad term.
Personalization's so,
yeah,
very broad.
That's a good point. Yeah.
That's a good point. But, you know, like standalone CDP, very first. So glad to have you as part of that. And then all the marketing and campaign, you know, all of that type of work, you are the first. So that's great. We don't have anybody in that space yet. We're primarily, if you look at the categories of software, it's experience. So it's commerce, it's content, it's search, more of that. And you're the first vendor in the MarTech space, which we're very excited about. We just don't have a lot of representation there. So glad that you're there. And we'd love to see some thought leadership from your side, work with you on those things, and bring Mach to this whole big category of MarTech.
Yeah, well, I can say we're excited to do just that, right? Talk about the value of the data engine to drive conversion, AOV, and customer lifetime value paired with marketing automation, and start to bring the same API first microservices architecture into your marketing channels. So we're excited to collaborate with others in the Alliance and bring that forward. And I guess to all the listeners out there, you can look to some of that coming over the next few months. Looking ahead, Kelly, you know, what are some of the things that the community of e-commerce business and technology leaders can expect from the Alliance, let's say in 2023?
We're going to continue to grow. So we're at 74 members right now. We hired our first ever.
And those members, just to clarify, those are Tech Alliance and agency and SI partners, correct?
Correct. Correct. Yes. A lot of really good big brand names, and a lot of smaller ones too that really completely dominate their respective categories. So we're still flooded with applicants, which is great. We get at least one or two submissions a week, which is great. We do have about a 70% rejection rate. So we're quite selective, and everything has to check out. But, you know, we're very happy to be welcoming more good, solid members into the Alliance. We have a full-time staff of 5, including our MD, and her name is Holly Hall. I'll give her a shout out. She's amazing. We as a board hired her to really professionalize the operations and, I mean, run this thing not just as a side project that a handful of us had been doing, you know, in addition to our day jobs, but a real professional who has spent a career managing large nonprofits and industry trade groups. And it's been great to see that. And we've already done a lot. I mean, just in terms of defining processes and policies, things like invoicing, you know, getting that all automated, you know, all the behind the scenes work that you need to do to run any business or nonprofit, you know, there's work involved there. There's tax filings, there's just 1,000 things you need. So I think we've got that pretty well under control. And we've already been increasing our pace of events. We do nearly one event a day somewhere around the world.
That's amazing.
But expect to see that improve. We're going to be doing much more in the US market because we were founded out of Europe and a little bit European heavy, but definitely moving kind of the center of gravity over to the US a little bit.
European heavy. Is that pasta, beer, and bratwurst? What is that?
Yeah, right. Of the five founding members on the board, I was the only American.
Yeah.
So yes, that's what it means. Good one. Good one. So I'd like to make it a little bit more global in scope. We'd love to go after more adjacent areas. So things like healthcare, for example, media. You know, there are a lot of adjacent areas, and I think your CDP will certainly help out with that. And that's something we'd love to work with you on, you know, as you build out that category. And just why retailers need a CDP, you know, tell that story. I don't think people quite understand that yet. I think that would be helpful. We're doing a big flagship event next year. So we had Mach 1 this year in London, which was a huge success. We're doing Mach 2 next year. We're in the planning phases of that.
Do you have a date for that?
We do. I probably shouldn't say because it's subject to change at this point, but it'll, I think, be June of next year. And then just generally, it's doing what we're doing and not screwing it up. I think we got a good thing here. It's making sure that the applications coming in are, you know, up to our standards, which we're very proud to have upheld. It's working with members to do a lot of thought leadership. You know, like I said, we have that panel on digital experience composition coming up. We have another one with the C-level of the search vendors, like I said. I'm doing an open source versus mock debate. And I'm joining up with a CTO of a member company, John Williams of Amplience. And we've got two industry experts on the other side taking up the open source side. So we're going to do a good friendly debate on mock versus open source and where the two fit. You know, so we're going to be doing a lot more things like that over time. Just keep doing what we're doing because it's working. Longer term, though, we're going to have to change the mission of what we do. And I can't predict when, but at some point we're going to catch the car we've been chasing and we're going to be the default, clearly the default. You know, I think we're most of the way there, but you know, there are a lot of big companies, big boring companies, probably shouldn't say that, but you know, and they do business with three vendors out there and it's hard to crack that. And once we become the default and people start saying, you know, of course we're going to do business with Mach. Why would you do business with, you know, legacy vendor X, right? When we've hit that point, I think we're going to have to evolve the alliance into much more of an industry trade association because we're not going to be lobbying for something necessarily anymore, right? We will have become the default, which was the whole point of this was to, you know, become the default here. We're going to have to now, at some point, transition into more of a community thing. More of a trade thing. I could see us doing a lot more events, you know, something like Commerce Next, if you're familiar with how Commerce Next works. You know, somebody like that I could see us doing, but we will always remain a nonprofit and keep in that spirit.
I don't think you're quite there yet, but I think the air is starting to get a little thinner and the crowds are starting to cheer because the crest of the hill isn't too far away. I'm kind of using a bike race analogy, like think of Alpe d'Huez or something like that.
100% true. We can see it. And the mood is shifting. We're getting a lot of really good analyst recognition. We're having a lot of folks demand Mach certified only vendors, which is great to see. And even just the social media, you know, people talk about Mach incessantly, which is great. You know, it's legitimately turned into a movement, which is what we were hoping for.
On that point, people may have heard the term Mach ambassador. Maybe see that on your site or see that people on LinkedIn. What does that mean? Maybe you can just kind of help our listeners understand. What is a Mach ambassador?
Sure. We have a group of 39 people and we're not adding too many more. I think we're going to get up to 50 total. And they're typically CTOs, CIOs, SVPs, VPs, and they're doing Mach transformations themselves.
Within their companies.
So we have the CTO of Sephora, for example. They're doing full Mach. We have the VP of e-commerce for Puma. You know, they're doing almost full Mach. But we have practitioners out there doing these events. And it's a way for them to come together without vendors to exchange information, network. you know, ask their peer group, hey, we need a search. Who's the best search right now in the market? Right? That type of discussion. They also publicly advocate for mock principles. And it's a good way for them to showcase all of the good work that they're doing. And it's a good way for us as a movement to gain more visibility out there by having people, real professionals say, hey, I'm a CTO of company X. You know, we're doing $3 billion a year online. This is real. This is legit. That's a big stamp of approval for us. So we're very grateful to have our ambassadors telling our story.
Yeah, that was a great move from my perspective. And I think it's tons of benefits. And it's a great opportunity for business leaders or technology leaders inside organizations to hear from peers who, as you said, are on that kind of transformation journey themselves. All right, Kelly, this is not the last question. This is the question before the last question. I'm going to sneak it in. It's so self-serving, totally self-aggrandizing, very indulgent of me, but I just couldn't help myself. Who was the first chief strategy officer in the commerce tech market?
You were.
That's just of a course, little inside you, joke defined, between Kelly and I.
You've defined what this role should look like. And you know what happened with Commerce Tools? We got to 700 people. You know, I had a pretty big team as CPO, and we split my role in half because you have to get to that point, right?
You
can't do it all. And I was looking for, well, you know, what do I want this new thing to look like? And I thought, well, I do some corp dev work. I do some thought leadership work. I do mock stuff. You know, like I do a lot of random stuff. But strategy seemed to, I think, be the unifying term there. And I thought, you know what? I know of a good CSO out there. So I'm not going to be the first, at least.
Like I said, totally indulgent of me to ask you, but I just...
It's a fitting title, though, for what we do.
It is indeed.
We get to do podcasts like this. You know, life is pretty good.
All right. Now for our real last question, Kelly. And this is such a great question to ask you. And, you know, you can kind of go high with the answer, or go low, or a mix of both. But the question is, what futuristic digital commerce innovation are you most looking forward to? Something that's kind of on the horizon, maybe something that's been nascent and talked about, or could be out of left field. Or alternatively, which innovation do you think is just kind of overhyped? It's time we stop talking about it. Time we move on. You think it's going to be an unmitigated failure. So you can kind of go high, or you can kind of go low.
I'll hit both. I'm going on record as saying the metaverse is a terrible idea. And I've been saying that for a long time. And I think finally the market is catching up to that. At least the shareholders of Meta have caught up to that. But I think virtual reality is a very isolating, limiting experience. I mean, people didn't even have legs in this metaverse, right? And we bought an Oculus Go years ago. It's sat in the corner collecting dust. It is not a widely used device. So I'm not excited about that. I don't think it's going anywhere. What I am really excited about, though, is augmented reality. And for far too long, we've always just said AR/VR. And those are two very different things with different use cases. And one side, I'm excited about it. I'm also dreading it personally as a consumer. Because you can imagine a not too distant future where we have glasses that augment the real world with anything you want. And you could imagine walking downtown somewhere, looking at somebody's shoes, and an augmented reality price tag pops up. Or walking down the aisle of a store. And, you know, you can imagine the Amazon, you know, augmented reality app. And it says, well, if you bought it on Amazon right here, click this virtual button, you know, it'll be 20% off. But the other side of that is advertisements, because obviously you're going to be pitched everywhere. And if I'm walking through the woods by myself with my dog, I don't want to be pitched an ad for a shampoo, right? So you can see both sides of this. I hope it's done responsibly. But in terms of commerce itself, that has an absolute game changer ability to change our market, even more than social media, more than anything, because now the entire physical world can be augmented with stuff.
Absolutely. And I think there's a lot of interesting use cases beyond B2C too for augmented reality, right? I think in B2B, whether it's replenishment, repair, all these kinds of things, it could kind of take DIY to the next level. There's a lot of things that will potentially benefit and impact. I too am like kind of dreading any more notifications or messages that interrupt my mental state or my life. We're already so kind of overwhelmed by information and, again, notifications and messages, and there's so many channels that I can imagine augmented reality could take that, unfortunately, to a next level where it only increases, in a sense, anxiety people feel about the amount of information coming at them, whether that's news, entertainment, sports, or work-related, or just even friends pinging you, right? It could be a little overwhelming. It'll be very interesting to see it evolve, but I agree with you. I think the opportunity for augmented reality is pretty tremendous, and there's a lot of use cases, and we already have customers who are utilizing augmented reality inside B2B applications, or how to bring information that's relevant to the consumer as they're assembling something. I mean, there's a lot of application you already see, in addition to things like visualizing a product on yourself or in a room or what have you. So it's already here. And I think we're close to seeing that reach some form of mass adoption for those kind of use cases. And then probably within 5 to 10 years, we start to see augmented reality, like you're describing, becoming more real, and it'll be very interesting to watch.
That'll be a really big one. But you know what is amazing about augmented reality is all of our products will perfectly serve that market.
That's right.
Because we're all API based. We always say, as Alliance members, we don't care what the head is. The head could be anything.
That's right.
Doesn't matter.
That's terrific. Kelly, thanks so much again for jumping on the show. Always love an opportunity to catch up with you. And I know all of our listeners will be eager to go check out mockalliance.org. We'll have links to Kelly and how you can reach him also on the landing page for the podcast. And Kelly, thanks again for being here.
Thanks for joining me, and thanks for pioneering my CSO role for me.
Well, to all the listeners out there, be safe. Be well. Here's to good business.